Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be talking with his good friend, Sifu Vincent Lin. Lots of gems, lots of fighting Jackie Chan, lots of, you want me to duct tape my junk? Let's get to it!
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Sifu Vincent Lin, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Sifu. Alex Richter.
So we actually tried to record an episode, I don't know if it was, I think it was last year at some point. And
It feels like
forever ago. Before I actually decided to do the podcast, Scott Adkins had that awesome channel where he's doing all like the interviews with all the movie guys. I'm like, I should do that. And I had the brilliant idea before I had this amazing luxurious studio here in Midtown Manhattan to record you answering all these questions. And then I'm like, I'll just record myself asking the questions and then edit it together.
It didn't work.
And I could never make that thing look like it wasn't some kind of spoof, right? So here we are. You are now back in New York City because you were away for a while.
After 18 months.
That's right. Yeah, you were out of the city. And now what is it? The smell of the garbage. What is it that's bringing you back to New York City?
It's only the beautiful women.
Got it. Okay, that's enough. That makes sense. So you're here, and then, which is great because then I can actually just have you in the studio and we can have a proper go at doing this episode. So some people know you from your martial arts instruction and probably I would venture to guess a lot of people know you from your films, and some people also now might know you from your
music,
humanitarian work and your music. Yep. So you are going to be giving a concert soon. Is that true?
Yes. Actually, it was supposed to be this month, but I postponed it because I wasn't sure what was going to happen with COVID.
Right.
So
sure.
We are going to, April 20th, 22.
Incredible. Yeah. And that's going to be where?
Carnegie Hall,
right? Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you play the piano and you're going to be doing original pieces?
Yeah. That's great. Of course, everything's based on this song that got nominated this year, Just Imagine People United, featuring Melissa B.
Wow.
And the Grammy announcements are tomorrow. So we're all, you know, keeping our fingers crossed.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's great. And you're also doing humanitarian work, you know, you've been doing it for a while, actually.
Yeah, six years. Nonprofit, We Can Save Children. So that's, taking me all over from East to West Africa, all through the Middle East.
Right. And you have a book, too, that I just got. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
Yeah, I can really depress you.
That's right.
You can have your Kleenex close to you.
Right.
Yeah, called Childhood Lost. that's on Barnes & Noble and also on Amazon. And I just actually finished the follow-up book to it, which I'll release next year, called Generation Hope. Because, you know, childhood loss is so, well, it's the reality of children facing, you know, famine, poverty, conflict.
Right.
So wanted to follow it up with something a little more optimistic.
Right. Sure. Great. Having put that aside,
okay.
I assume most people who are here listening to this podcast they know you from Operation Condor, fighting Jackie Chan, and doing all of these great films. So I thought, why don't we go through your IMDb, kind of movie by movie, and then we can talk a little bit about each of them. And I do know...
I need a drink of lemon water.
We're going to get started, especially when we get to what I consider the crowning achievement of your career, which is Robotrix.
Oh! God.
We'll get to that.
And he did it live.
So, according to IMDb...
According
to IMDb...
Don't believe anything you ever read, I'm telling you.
That's right.
Except my book.
The first movie on your IMDb is a movie called Code of Honor, and it's got Chow Yun-fat.
Right. Yeah.
But so, are you actually in
that movie? No, that was 1987. I wasn't even in Hong Kong yet. So I mean, I'd been to Hong Kong, but I wasn't there for film.
So how do these things happen? Is this like there's another guy in that movie who looks like you, and then somebody was just like, that must be Vincent Lin?
There was no other Vincent Lin. Yeah. There was a Vincent Klyn. K-L-Y-N-N, I think. And he was actually in that film.
Oh, is he from Cyborg?
He was the film in...
That's
The lead villain in Cyborg.
Yeah, that guy Vincent was super... With the eyes and everything. Yeah. I remember that because I'd recently watched Cyborg, and I'm like, whatever happened to that guy? And then I saw his name, and I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, I know.
He's like some bizarro world version of
And
you.
He wasn't in Code of Honor either.
No.
So, yeah.
Shout out to Vincent Klyn, villain of Cyborg. Okay, so then after that, well, there's another movie called, well, technically the first one's called Brotherhood, which is 86.
Yeah, even earlier.
Even earlier, so that definitely couldn't be you.
Danny Chan, yeah.
Yes, okay. So when did you first go to Hong Kong? Like, what was your, how did you get the chance to go to Hong Kong basically to make movies? Or did you go there for another reason and then stumble into movies?
Well, no, actually, the first time I went to Hong Kong was 1983, and I actually met with Shaw Brothers then.
Wow.
The famous producer, Lok Yi Ling, who's produced lots of Shaw Brothers and films after that age of Hong Kong cinema.
Sure.
And I was originally supposed to be signed on a three-picture deal back in 83. So this would have been even before Cynthia was there with...
Wow.
Which was 85, doing Yes, Madam.
Right.
And... it didn't work it out at that time, mm-hmm. But I returned in the spring of 1988, and that was to do Tiger Cage, which I think is the film after.
Yes, it is. And
thank
so, but,
God.
So yeah, so finally they have three more movies with of Vincent
Three's
in there.
It's a charm.
Got it. So you already had Tiger Cage then before you went to Hong Kong. Then I assume. So you went there specifically to do that film.
No, I didn't. I mean, I did. But it was because a photographer here in New York called Zan Ng, mm-hmm. He was quite famous at the time, and he was shooting a lot of modeling stuff with him. And he just basically, you know, said, have you ever thought of going to Hong Kong to do film? And I said, well, hasn't every martial artist? You know?
Right, sure.
But so he, you know, long story short, he put me in touch with an art director. I met the art director at the Sheraton hotel coffee shop, like all major meetings are held
right.
coffee shops
yeah. Yeah, or hotel lobbies.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. And he put me in touch with four film companies. One was Cinema City, one was Boho, which was Sammo's company.
Yes.
Met Raymond Chow at Gawor Golden Harvest.
Yes.
And then the kind of newly formed company Dapo, D&B,
Dixon
Poon, who married Michelle Yeoh.
Yes, yes.
And they were already in production of Tiger Cage.
Wow.
They had started. So I was introduced to Fish Fong, which was production manager and Yun's partner for like 30 years.
Right.
And then I met Yun Woo-ping. I was supposed to actually leave, and they said, oh, you know, we want you to meet Yun Woo-ping. And I basically was in an office this size, and
right.
Yun's sitting across the table just like we are. And he says, can you do something? And I had about this much space.
Uh-huh.
Jeans on. I was not like warmed up to do this. So yeah, I threw a few things, a couple of kicks and what have you. So I was supposed to leave for the States the next day. And
right.
And I said, Fish, man, I gotta go. I gotta head back, man. I got no money to stay in Hong Kong.
Sure.
He said, no, I stay a few days. I said, I can't.
Right.
Went back to Connecticut. Within 36 hours, I got a call from Fish, and they flew me back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. But wow, talk about like throwing you to the lions. Like you go to Hong Kong for the first one, then you have Yuen Wu Ping right there. You're in front of like some of the best, right? It's like you didn't warm up by doing like sea level stuff in Hong Kong. You just like went right into it. That's incredible.
Yeah, because most everybody knows Tiger Cage obviously became this huge Asian hit. Right. And it was Yuen Wu Ping's comeback film. He had obviously was the one who started Jackie's career with, you know, the early Drunken Master and Snake and the Eagle's Shadow. Yeah. And he was already starting to groom a young Donnie Yen.
With Drunken Tai Chi, I think, right? That was like,
And nobody really remembers that, but of course we remember Tiger Cage. And he had the part in Tiger Cage.
That's
so
great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, Tiger Cage, fantastic. So you're in Hong Kong now, and your next movie, which goes on IMDb's Female Reporter, which was also Blonde Fury.
Yeah.
As you know, people who are new to Hong Kong films might not understand, like most of these movies, well, many of these movies might have multiple names. You have the Chinese title and the international title in this version. Now that's 89. So you went back to the States and then came back to do that, or did you shoot you were there?
We were. I was brought to Hong Kong like in the summer. By that time, it was summer of 88. So I spent, you know, it's interesting. I was there 3 months for Tiger Cage.
Right.
But I actually shot only about 15 days.
Wow.
So it was actually really good in a way because I spent a lot of time on the set just watching and trying to learn.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, I spent time visiting family because I have family in Hong Kong and, you know, spent time in China and stuff. So it was... And I was ready after the film came out, went to the premiere. I was ready to come home because I thought I'm going to do this film, get it out of my system. And
You did your martial arts movie.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the film was such a huge hit. Within a week, I got a call from Golden Harvest to because they were redoing Blonde Fury.
Redoing it? Oh, yeah. You mean they had already initially shot it?
Because the original director was Man Hoi.
Oh, okay.
And the movie got shelved for a year.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they brought, Yuen Kwai, Corey Yuen, to kind of beef up the film, add more action, add the end fight scene. And so they needed a couple of extra Kwai Lo, you know, foreigners, Western. Sure. So they brought me and Jeff Falcon on.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So I know that that's an amazing fight scene you have with Cynthia. We have the poster here at City Wing Chun, which was awesome because you brought Cynthia here to City Wing Chun. You both signed it, so I have that poster signed by both of you. The fight scene you have with her there in that warehouse, you're like between those shipping containers. I remember there was a story about her having to kick you in the groin.
Yeah, thank you.
And
she didn't say kick me in the balls. Yeah. Can we say that?
And so, not to make you relive any trauma,
it's a famous story.
It's a famous story, but like let's talk about the Hong Kong film safety protocols and how they padded you up for this groin kick.
Yes. Well, she does her famous, you know, scorpion kick.
Right, over the back.
Over the back. So she hit me with that. And then from that, she kind of inverted the kick into a scoop kick, you know, to the groin. So, I mean, you know, Cynthia is obviously one of the greatest female martial artists, you know, and has amazing control. But we said, you know, we better put a cup on.
Right.
But, you know, of course, Yuen Kwai is saying, more power, you know. Those famous two words you always heard on a film, more power. So she brings a scoop cup, it's like, oh man, that hurts.
Right.
So they brought some kind of padding, like old socks or whatever they had, you know, old fabric, shoved that in there, still smarted, right? So then they start unraveling toilet paper. And they said, just stuff it down the front of your pants.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Basically, SAG would probably have the same rules here in the States, right?
Probably, yeah.
All right.
Especially if you're using Charmin, then it's going to be good. But Hong Kong toilet paper?
It's that rough stuff from China, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you wouldn't even, wipe a dog's ass with it. So I'm stuffing this roll of, like, toilet paper down my shorts. And, you know, talk about looking well hung.
You're right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus. I'm like out here. But, you know, we got the shot.
Wow.
With more power.
Right, with more power. Yeah. That's incredible. Mm. And then I remember, and I believe it's for one of your upcoming films that we haven't discussed yet, but let's talk, since we're kind of talking about the way they do things in Hong Kong, not necessarily being quite, let's say, as safe as they do it over here. There's a scene you did, I think we're talking about Outlaw Brothers, with something had to do with a wire, or maybe it was still Blonde Fury, where you get kicked off and they have to pull you with a wire. And
that was Outlaw Brothers.
Outlaw Brothers. But they decided to test it first, or you asked for them to test it before you did.
I asked them. And actually, I got to thank my Hong Kong, Guaylo brother,
Bruce Fontaine.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry. I've heard the story. That's why I can fill in the gaps.
He came over because we're up on the rafter, fighting Yukari Oshima.
Right.
And she does this sliding sidekick, hitting me off this thing, and it's like 3-4 stories up.
Right.
And they laid the boxes down and the mattresses, as what they do. And Bruce said, "Man, if depending on how many guys pull that wire,
right,
you're gonna go beyond where those boxes are. You're going to land on the concrete."
Right.
So I said, "Yeah, you're right." So
because they don't really know how much strength they need to get, and they're probably going to overdo it to make sure you're clear.
What happened was they bring 2 or 3 guys, and the wire kept snapping. So then they get a stronger tension wire. Now they need. They said, "Let's get 6 guys, basically." So I went over to Frankie and Jan. And I said, "Frankie, we need to put more boxes because if I'm launched out, I'm going to hit the concrete."
And you're lucky Frankie speaks English. I've heard him speak English before.
So they did. They put more boxes across, and that's where I landed. Yeah.
In the
extra space.
Incredible, incredible. Yeah. Now, most of these fight scenes, how is the choreography done in general? Do you rehearse these things and then go in and shoot it, or do you basically kind of rehearse it, like you show up and then you're told how you're going to do it and then you just kind of do it? How much prep time do you actually have in creating these fight scenes? Like, do you even know what you're going to do on the day you show up, or do you?
No,
they just tell
you don't
you
know what you're going
to
do on the day. Mm-hmm. And they work it out on set. So you get with the choreographers and the stars, and you're trying to work back and forth. And,
right.
Yeah. And if it doesn't really look good or it doesn't work out, then they change it. Yeah. It was a little different with Jackie, of course, but that's a whole nother story.
Right, right. So 1989, Blonde Fury. The next one on your IMDb is Miracles, 1989. Stunman. Yeah, it says Party Guest.
That's it.
That was with Jackie Chan and Anita Moy, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
And Miracles was named Lady of... Canton
Godfather or something
The Canton Rose Lady.
Yes.
I was just background.
Right. Were background, but you were there. Did you meet the late Anita Moy?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But not on there. I met her. Used a lot of parties in Lan Kwai Fong.
Wow. Wow.
She's a great dancer and loved. Of course, she was a big pop star.
Of course. Yeah. What a tragic
classy.
Loss.
Yeah. classy.
Yeah. Her and Leslie Cheung. Every time I see them on the screen or see an old movie or whatever, it's just like, oh, I really miss that old time in Hong Kong cinema. They're really fantastic. And now there's that new biopic about Anita.
That's right.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to see it soon. Okay. So you were an extra in that movie. And then the next movie, and these are great titles, by the way. These almost seem like OnlyFans video titles. The next one is 1989, Live Hard.
The guy who's laughing in the background is from Notting Hill. Sorry, mate. Live Hard.
Live Hard. Just
what a title.
Terrorist / explosives. Yeah, that was your title in that movie. So yeah, you were explosives in that movie?
Yeah, I was explosives,
right,
yeah.
Got it.
Or explosive.
Right.
There was, of course, Yam Dat Wah I got to work with again.
Simon Yam.
Interesting thing I should bring up. Because I became quite close with Jackie Jung, Jung Hong Yao, and Yam Dat Wah from Tiger Cage. And I always remember Simon, saying to me, he said, "Look, no matter what film role you're offered in Hong Kong or any job, modeling or anything," he says, "never, ever, even if it's 1 day or 1 hour, never turn it down."
Right.
And I said, "Okay." He said, "And I'll tell you why." He says, "Because it's not going to last. This time you know, this surreal time of filmmaking is going to end at some point. He was right. Right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's still managed to remain quite prolific, yeah. And maybe because he's always kept out there.
And I listened to him. I never did. In right. fact, the one time I did turn it down, it was I gave the job to a friend of mine who was visiting me from the States.
Right.
Yeah. And it was 3 days working with Samuel.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Were there any films that you had the chance to do or that you were maybe in the running that you either didn't get or you had decided not to go for that you, in hindsight, you wish you had gone for? Or
Operation Condor was one.
Uh-huh.
Initially, I wasn't chosen.
Ah.
When they did the initial auditions, mm-hmm. Right in the beginning, they auditioned basically every Western actor at that time mm-hmm. in Hong Kong. And there were two people who they didn't. I was one and Mark Houghton was the other.
That they didn't take you guys?
Well, they didn't take us. And we went through the audition process, or, you know, jumping through hoops, and it was like the most craziest audition of any film I had ever done.
It's funny you use the phrase jumping through hoops, because when I think of an audition for Jackie Chan, I imagine people actually jumping through hoops.
No, we basically did, you know, leaping over tables. I mean, crazy stuff.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So initially, I didn't get chosen. But at the time, I was, you know, really busy. I mean, I was working a lot.
Right, right. Yeah. What was that like? Was Jackie actually there for the audition?
No.
No. So not it was like his handlers and stuff.
It was his stunt team.
Would they basically
primarily
have
the, I think, who was heading his stunt team at the time was Chris Lee.
Okay.
Who I had worked with a number of times, especially on Middleman in the Line of Duty 5.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And did they have like an obstacle course set for you? Like,
yeah,
what is it?
That
what
day
is it
was an obstacle course.
What is a Jackie Chan audition like at that time? It's like they tell you what to do and then they just watch you. Were they filming you as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. you know, like if I'm sitting on this chair right here, flip over the table, you know, get kicked and fall back on the chair. I mean, flipping over the table. I mean, crazy stuff.
Right, yeah. Right. Wow. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. Okay, so the next one on your IMDb is probably the first movie. It's probably not the first movie I saw that you were in, but this movie I saw as a teenager.
I don't think I Live Hard, man. That was the time I got to meet Wong Jung Lee, my favorite of all kickers in the world.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. What was that like? Did he?
Amazing.
Is it intimidating?
Yeah, because he came up to me, and he's such a ladies' man, too.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He came up to me. He says, I heard, you know, you're a good kicker. And I said, yeah, I hold my own.
Yeah, but like when Wong Jung Lee says, yeah, I heard you're a good kicker, yeah, you're like,
ah. He says, you know, do you have good control? And I said, yeah, it's pretty good. You know, we threw some things back and forth. So, yeah. I mean, and he's, yeah, I idolized him.
Yeah, he's amazing. Oh my God. He's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Okay, so the next movie I saw as a teenager. I remember I got it in Seattle. I think either got it at Scarecrow Video or I got it in Chinatown. When I saw this movie, it was one of my favorite action films.
Which one's this?
Is Outlaw Brothers.
Because
I just remember seeing like the action set pieces because up until that time, I mean, it's in the mid-90s when I saw that. So I was pretty new to Hong Kong cinema. The only time I had seen modern action with like martial arts and stunts was like the Jackie Chan movies. And it was the first time I'd seen like a non-Jackie Chan movie where like the quality of the stunts and the martial arts action was still very, very high. And I was like, wow. And of course I knew, you know, Frankie Chan from Prodigal Son and stuff. So Outlaw Brothers, pretty amazing. Like that's like a pretty awesome Hong Kong film from that time. So how did you get that movie and what was that like?
After Blonde Fury, I auditioned to do a film that Frankie had come out with before Outlaw Brothers called Burning Ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to start that film. And then my mother got really, really ill.
Oh.
So I flew back to the States and I was back like 3 months. So when I went back to Hong Kong, it was really like difficult. It was like, you know, starting again.
Yeah, like lost momentum, yeah,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Lost the momentum. But on Blonde Fury, God, some of the days, I thought Corey Yoon hated my guts.
Uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh.
There were some days I'd be there trying to get this action piece and, you know, I couldn't get the timing and da-da-da. Man, and one day, Jeff Falcon and I was a night shot, and I'm trying to get this timing. And Yoon
is there in the warehouse, right?
And Yoon Kwai is sitting on the top of this rock, you know, talking with a stunt man, and he's eating these shelled peanuts. And,
uh-huh. You know,
and I'm trying to get this thing. I couldn't get it right, and all of a sudden, boom, he throws a peanut at my forehead. It's a great aim. Hits me in the forehead.
The kung fu aim.
And he has this kind of grin on his face, you know, and I'm like, I could feel like the blood boiling, but I just, you know, kept doing it. I was humble, you know, I got to eat bitter.
Yes.
And then when Outlaw Brothers came up, Frankie Chan called me directly.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I want you to come in. I'm doing this new film. So I went to his office. He says, I want you to be one of the fighters who fight Yukari Oshima. And I said, wow. You don't want me to audition? He says, no, you don't need to audition. He said, I said, why not? right? He says, I spoke with Yun Kwai. And when he brought his name up, I'm like, God. He says, Yun Kwai said, you're one of the best, if not the best, Western actor to work with. You never complain. You never swear. You always just try your best.
Right.
Yeah, so that's how it happened.
Incredible. Yeah. So that eating that peanut to the head, you had no idea helped you get that job in the future. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've heard stories about Western actors going to Hong Kong who are phenomenal martial artists, but they had a little bit of that plucky
ego.
Ego, right?
And they did one film and they were kicked out.
Yeah.
They got blacklisted. I'm not going to name any, but I know quite a few.
I can name a few.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a big problem because especially, you know, one, they're new to films and they're acting like they're the big star. And two, that's not how it works over there.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really work that way any place.
Yeah.
If you start acting like an ego, you're not a star yet.
Right.
You're just trying to make your way up the ladder, you know?
Right. So in Outlaw Brothers, there is a stunt. Which involves a car and involves, I believe, a pipe going through the windshield of said car.
Was I driving the car? And Dan Mintz was on my right. I believe I was driving it. It was Frankie Chan throwing this bamboo pole.
Bamboo pole.
Through the window. Right. Yeah. And so I said, damn, how is he going to aim and not? And they didn't change the glass on the windscreen.
To the candy glass. Yeah.
It was the real deal. So Dan Mintz is starting to get upset.
Right.
You know, many of these guys got very emotional. You know, I try to keep calm. And he says, you know, we don't know how that thing's going to land. Man.
Yeah, sure,
it could go through our face, you know, or the glass everywhere.
Did you just show up that day and they're like, okay, you're going to drive through and they're going to huck this bamboo thing through?
Yeah, that's what happened. So
I need to talk to my agent. What's going on here?
We said, is there something like we can wear to protect our face?
Right. Like a helmet.
Yeah. Right. So the guy said, we'll give you paper masks. So basically he got like, you know, a piece of A4 paper and cut it out and cut out the eyes. I said, what is the point of us being in the car then? Because you're not going to shoot the reaction shot.
Right.
Otherwise you'll see these paper masks.
He said,
you could have anyone. You could have, you know, Fred Flintstone in the car.
Exactly.
Right? So they said, no, you got to be in the car. So, and we didn't bother with the paper mask. We just kind of winged it, you know, and saw the direction of the, but luckily it actually, it being real glass or a real windshield, it actually helped because when it hit the glass, it just
stuck in there. Yeah, because the front windshields actually have that. It's a safety glass that's not meant to shatter, right?
So it's a good thing it wasn't.
But it went right into the middle, though,
It went through the middle, yeah. As you see,
That's incredible.
And
that's incredible.
Actually, that evening, if you've seen that film, when it was actually a stunt driver, he turns the car and he's supposed to hit Frankie Chan. Frankie Chan bounces off the rear side of the car. Three stuntmen went to hospital that evening. Two stuntmen went to hospital that evening.
Right.
One, they dressed up again. And actually, Jackie Chan showed up that evening, too.
Wow.
Kind of, you know, to see what was happening. And
was that the first time you met Jackie Chan?
No, I had met him in February of 88 in the coffee shop of the the Regent Hotel, which is now the Intercontinental.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Coffee shop, hotel lobby. It's always the same.
Yeah.
Incredible. Wow. So that was probably the craziest stunt that they had ever asked you to do, or was there something?
Well, then the other thing being thrown off the rafter. Yeah.
Got it. But what would you say was the most dangerous stunt you have performed? Was it one of those two?
Yeah.
Like in your whole career?
Well, probably. Obviously, the stunt in Operation Condor.
Operation Condor stuff is pretty
good. Yeah, gnarly. Because actually I got injured in that one, whereas the others I didn't.
Got it.
So, you know, I guess you weigh up which is more dangerous. Yeah.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners. If you're a Wing Chun practitioner, especially from the WT or Leung Ting line, and want to get really personalized immersion training with me, you can now apply to do an immersion course with me here in NYC, or if you like the sun, in my Florida home near Orlando. These courses are for instructors or anyone who's serious about learning the art in detail and working hard. I teach in program blocks like Siunam Tao, Cham Kyu, Byuji, Wooden Dummy, and those include the Chi Sao theory, fighting applications, and training methods as well. If you're really serious about learning Wing Chun, check out the link in the description below to find out about applying for a spot. For those of you who are not quite ready to do full private immersion training, you can also apply for a spot at either our winter or summer intensive training camps. We have a few spots available for non-city Wing Chun students, so apply today. A link for those options are in the description below. And now back to me. Next movie on your IMDb, Middleman, 1990.
Which is In the Line of Duty 5.
In the Line of Duty 5, wow. Yeah. So, any stories about that one?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I'm the only...
And let me... But is there any stories you can tell on the podcast?
Oh, I should. Oh, yes. I have to. So, I show up to Seoul. The movie had started already. I had been chosen to do two films. It was either, and I actually had to pick because they were shooting at the same time, is either doing Middleman in Seoul or is another film, I don't remember, that we're shooting St. Petersburg, Russia. Mm-hmm. So I show up in Seoul and they had rented the whole floor of the hotel, mm-hmm. right? And the producer says, you know, we don't have any single rooms. Do you mind if you share a room with another actor? He's a model they brought, American model they brought. I think they modeled for Ford. Uh-huh. And he was brought in from Singapore.
Okay.
So I said, no, I don't mind. So I get to the hotel. And as I'm walking down the hallway, the room's all the way to the end. But every room, the door's open. So as I'm looking from left to right, but there's women in every one, Korean, young, in every single room, right? Two or three. I said, wait a minute, which film am I working on? So I get to the end, I knock on the door, and as the door opens, he says, you must be Vincent. I'm Peter.
The model?
Yeah, of course. But it was cool, you know. He was really cool, and he had the most amazing clothes. And in fact, one night I was in the room and I was trying on some of his clothes, and he walks in. I'm like, oh man, I'm trying on your jacket. I'm sorry. He says, no, you look so beautiful. You can wear any of my clothes. And he really had some amazing stuff. And,
wow.
And we, you know, were the same size and everything. Right. So
there're potentially photos of you out partying in Seoul wearing some crazy clothes.
Yeah. The problem is the next morning I go to breakfast.
Okay.
And the mama-san is sitting, and all the stunt, and it was many of the Jackie Chan stunt crew. Chris Lee was heading it up, right? Mm-hmm. And the mama-san looks at me, and between each stuntman is a young Korean girl.
Got it.
Woman. I want to say girl.
Okay.
Right. Young female. And the mama-san looks at me and says, you here for a movie? I said, yeah, I just arrived last night. She said, what are your room number? God. Yeah.
Wow. There you go.
It was an
hospitality.
Definitely.
It's part of the budget.
Yeah.
Got it. Great. Next movie, Undeclared War, 1990.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you even know which one that is?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's the one by Ringo Lam. And it was the first film they did in Sync Sound.
Mm. Oh, wow. First film in Sync Sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, prior to that time, all Hong Kong films were shot without sound.
Yeah.
They were dubbed afterwards. Speaking of that, did you have to go back and do dubbing for all the films you had done prior, or did they have someone else do that for you?
No. It was depend. Like on Tiger Cage, Yuen Wo Ping wanted me to speak in Cantonese. Uh-huh. So I tried it in Cantonese. Uh-huh. And then they said, let's do it in English as well.
Okay.
So, you know, sometimes... Yeah, they did it afterwards.
Right.
I think most of the time they did.
And what was it like working with Ringo Lam, the late Ringo Lam, kind of legendary director from Hong Kong?
I can't really say it was because my role was so kind of minor, you know, so.
Yeah, you're a bodyguard slash terrorist.
Yeah.
You got a face of a terrorist.
really. But, you know, it was great because working with, obviously, Vernon Wells, you know, who was from The Road Warrior
right.
in the space, you know. And there were some really, really, really funny stories from these guys, you know, because they came from Australia to do this film, you know, and they were working actors, right? And here we were kind of in this surreal golden age where we were just working like film after film after film, you know. And plus for me, I was signed with Elite, mm-hmm. the modeling agency, right? It's the top modeling agency in the world. So if I wasn't doing film, I was doing TV commercials, you know, runway stuff. And also I was signed with Polygram Records. So I was writing for Canto Pop stuff. So working all the time. And I remember guys from Australia said, do you realize guys would give blowjobs back in Australia to get the kind of work you get? Yeah, I swear that's what he said. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, of course.
Crazy.
Of course. Yeah, I think people don't realize how kind of prolific it was.
It was surreal. It really was.
Yeah, even in my limited interactions with people who've been in Hong Kong films, like especially people from the Shaw Brothers era who were on contract, like half the time when I asked them about movies they were in, they don't even really remember them because they did so many of them. And it was like, it was just, they were kind of punching a clock and showing up.
Yem Dot Wah has done like 150 films.
Yeah, it's incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Then we have Point of No Return, 1990. Here, you've been upgraded to lead bodyguard.
Thank you. That's with Gofei, right?
I'm pulling it up here. Looks...
I remember
The
first day of filming when we're doing all the, you know, kowtow and with the incense.
I was with
Bay Logan that day.
Oh, no kidding.
They were at Gofei's office. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, Jackie Chung in there, Joey Wong. Yeah.
And Joey Wong, right. I don't remember why Bay was there, but there was some kind of collaboration. But I remember, Bay being there that day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we have, another pretty... pretty famous movie among martial artists, King of the Kickboxers, with Billy Blanks and who's the other guy in there? What's
Steve Tartaglia?
No.
Jerry Trimble. No.
Jerry Trimble.
Lauren Avedon.
Yeah, Lauren Avedon. For some of the sake of me, I couldn't. Yeah,
he's the
main guy, right?
Yeah, come on.
I couldn't remember. So you were a warehouse fighter number two.
Yeah, like 4 days I was working on it.
Yeah, it says as Vincent Lin. There's no N in your name.
That's all right. Winston.
Yes.
Got it.
And
hey,
so
look, last time I saw Jackie was here in New York.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, right?
And as soon as he saw me, he says, Winston! Still, after all this time, he still can't pronounce his V's.
Yeah, but who's going to correct Jackie Chan, right?
No one.
Right? Any stories from King of the Kickboxers? Your role was also kind of short in that one, right? I assume because you're warehouse fighter number two.
Yeah, the only thing that comes to mind was when Steve Tartaglia disappears from the set.
Oh,
yeah, he disappears, and we're trying to find him to do this fight scene with Jerry Trimble. And, you know, there's Mark King plays one of the, like, SWAT members, and we're standing around, and there's this huge, like, 35-millimeter Panavision on this tripod, you know, and they were using those. They cost, like, $250,000 for those cameras.
Sure.
Right? And Steve's there, you know, he's always very nervous and agitated, and he leans on it.
Oh, geez.
And you see in slow motion the Panavision doing this. Yeah. And, of course, luckily, Mark, being 6'5", he reached his arm and caught it just before, you know, it would have been in bits.
Yeah. Wow.
That day I do remember. Yeah.
So then after that comes perhaps the movie you're most known for, which is Operation Condor, 1991. Well, according to your IMDb, King of Kickboxers, 1990, Operation Condor, 1991, where you play Mark slash
Aiden. And Robotrix was after that on IMDb?
I have not come to Robotrix yet. we're definitely going to talk about it. I'm wondering when the Criterion selection re-release of Robotrix will come
When
out.
Did they put Fury in Red on that?
Fury God, in Red. Let's see. Oh, that's also 90. So you have a bunch in 91.
Yeah.
So
I was actually, interestingly about that, Operation Condor, Robotrix, Fury in Red. There were a five-day period. Mm-hmm. I was going from one set to the other.
Wow.
And Jackie called Wong Lung Wai, who was partly directing Fury and Red.
Veteran Shaw Brothers legends. Yeah.
With Conan Lee.
Yes.
And he said, you got to kill off Vincent. And I was supposed to be in the film from the beginning to the end.
Right.
Right. He said, you got to kill him off. He says, I need him. But, yeah. So they killed me off.
Wow. Can you imagine?
And the same thing happened in the Line of Duty 5.
Really?
Yeah. If you look at the film, the first like 25 minutes, I'm in every other shot, every other scene, I'm in it. So I was supposed to be in the whole film. They get like 25, 30 minutes in and they're like, what are we going to do with him? I will kill him.
No kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
That's a top-notch
Hong
Kong
writing.
We don't
know what to do with him next.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So yeah, well, Fury in Red, I get kicked in the ocean.
Right.
It wasn't me, of course.
Right.
Kicked
right.
somebody, some stuntman in the ocean.
So I always laugh sometimes when people overanalyze certain genres of Hong Kong films and they're like, what was the director's idea behind this scene here? Mm. And it's like, well, he maybe just got rid of that guy because they had nothing to do with him, right?
That's it.
And sometimes I think they overlook some of these things. So you're in the final fight scene with Jackie Chan, which is an amazing fight scene in that big wind tunnel where you're basically flying and fighting. And it's, I think, one of the most creative fight scenes Jackie Chan has ever had.
Considered one of his top 10 best.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least in his book.
And you're in there with him. So what was that like? Obviously, it's not a real wind tunnel. You're on wires.
Yeah.
But you got pretty banged up in that one, as I recall.
Yeah, I did. We all got banged up. Yeah. And I remember the first day of shooting, the stunt team came over and we, for 30 minutes, we worked on this, I don't know, 24, 30 moves back and forth.
Right.
Jackie showed us up on set. So this is like, 20 films later in Hong Kong, right?
Right.
So I figure by this time, I'm kind of seasoned,
Yes.
I've got this thing down, But I felt like the moment, maybe it was nerves.
Right.
You want to do, you really want to impress him. You want to do a good job. And I felt like I had two left feet. Yeah. And Jackie walks over. He doesn't like the choreography. He says, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. So there I was 30 minutes working this choreography.
And then you just got to change it.
You got to change it on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah. But, a few days in, you feel kind of Jackie's kind of,
it's like the I heard it's like a cadence. It's a rhythm.
His lightheartedness, his goofiness, there were some days on set where we wouldn't do anything, right?
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
because a new car had been sent from Japan. And, he's like, Vincent, come over here. Look at this new Mitsubishi with all this.
In the middle of filming.
Yeah. He'd be playing Game Boy and stuff like
this. No kidding.
Yeah, it was crazy. But the thing is with me, because I had this crazy makeup on,
That's right. You had like the big scar all over your face.
3 hours every day.
Jeez.
And it was so uncomfortable.
Right.
Uncomfortable, to wear this. And I remember one day I'm sitting in the makeup, putting the damn thing, and Jackie walks in. From King of, not from King of the Kickboxer, Johnny Wong comes in. No, wait a minute. Who was even before Bruce Lee? The one-armed boxer. Who was the name?
Oh, Jimmy Wang Yu.
Jimmy Wang Yu
walks
in.
Oh.
I didn't recognize him, though.
Oh.
Right?
And you didn't ask him, like, hey, can you get me a coffee by accident?
No. So Jackie and, they speak a few things, and Jackie looks at me and says, do you know who that was? I said, don't recognize him. Remember the, one-armed boxer? Jimmy Wang Yu? I said, Wang Yu? I said, yeah, of course. He said, do you know who he is today?
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
Yeah.
I don't have to mention.
Yeah, he's a big boss. Yeah.
And then
they
saw him again. I met him.
He was here in New York a few years ago.
Yeah, he did the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
So that was
Jackie's very grateful to him because Jimmy Wang Yu got Jackie out of his contract with Lo Wei. So
that's right.
Yeah, famous, yeah. famous story.
Yeah, and then like, you know, the first 10 days of filming that, I had signed a 10-day contract. It took 10 days just for them to figure out the makeup.
Wow.
You know, Jackie would walk down and look at it. No, it's no good. Start again. You know, wow. You got to make him uglier. He's too good looking to be a villain.
Real problems.
Yeah, huge problems.
Yeah. Well, I heard Operation Condor was basically Jackie's like Apocalypse Now. It was way over budget. Everything. It was taking way too long.
Filming disasters in the Sahara.
Didn't a bunch of actors get in trouble? Like they were in a hotel and they were all doing things they shouldn't be doing.
They were using the fake money, the movie money.
Really? To buy stuff?
And stuff. Local women of Marrakesh.
Yeah, with fake movie money.
Yeah, and the producer got arrested and got stuck in Marrakesh while the rest of the crew flew back to Hong Kong.
Wow. But that fight scene you're in there, that was shot in Hong Kong.
All the Shaw Brothers.
Shaw Brothers. Yeah. The studio. Yeah, because they have big studio for that.
I think they spent $2 million on that set alone.
Wow. Crazy. Yeah, for Hong Kong standards, that's absolutely crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah. For that time?
Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
And so you whacked your head on one of those.
Yeah, being catapulted through these harnesses. And so once again, it gets back to, oh, no, he's not moving fast enough through the frame. Let's get six more
power.
Yeah. So you get six more guys. So basically, they had the whole stunt team pulling this freaking rope as I'm boom, And of course, I didn't tuck my chin down,
And you end up hitting your head on the plane or what?
No, I hit my head, the back of my head on those wind slats.
Oh, for the fans. Yeah. Yeah.
So the slat cracked open, cracked the back of my head, and I'm hanging in the air like a marionette. Jackie's standing on the podium behind the camera. They pull me towards him. I'm standing there, moving back and forth. I put my hand on his shoulder, and he says, "Are you okay? You okay?" He says, "Because we're gonna do it again in 15 minutes." I collapsed.
Yeah. You okay? Take a 15 minutes.
Yeah, and they put some duct tape on the back of my head
to keep you from bleeding.
Yeah.
Wow, that's high level.
Yeah.
High level. You complained to SAG after that,
oh,
right?
Oh yeah. No wonder I still have brain damage.
So after Operation Condor, there is Fatal Recall, 1991. Even IMDb, it looks like the movie poster they have is like the Thai version of it, and you play Vincent. So that? I have a feeling that's actually you, right?
Probably.
Let me take a look here. Let's see what the great recall. IMDb says here.
What is that?
Okay, so who's?
I did a lot of films there. I don't even remember half of them.
Yeah, so Alex Mann. Let's see here.
Fatal Recall.
Most of these, I don't recognize most of these actors here. This could be one of them IMDb flubs.
It could be.
All right, so then we got Touch and Go, 1991.
Don't know that?
All right. Sounds like another OnlyFans title right there.
Yeah, really.
Then we got Fury in Red, 1991, where you play Winston.
Yes, that is correct.
Which just seems like someone just got your name wrong. Vincent Winston? Winston, right?
Yeah, I play actually the boss of a Vietnamese triad gang.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you have any fight scenes in there?
Yeah, I did.
Nice. Who's in that movie?
He was throwing grenades. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Robin Cho was in there.
Oh, Robin Cho
and Conan Lee.
Conan Lee, right? Yeah. Also George Chang. Oh, yeah. Super cool.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, there was a really risky stunt I did in that.
Really?
We filmed in, like many films, was being filmed in a high rise that was in the process of being built.
Uh huh.
Right. So they wanted me to jump down, grab the steel cable that will be the new elevator shaft. So grab the steel cable and slide down to the next floor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with my bare hands. So they put duct tape. They taped duct tape.
Duct tape. Seems like that's the answer to everything in Hong Kong.
Yeah. They put duct tape in between the palms of my hands. And I had to reach for no safety net below. So I really didn't know how slippery it was going to be.
Especially with the duct tape on.
With the duct tape, yeah.
Holy cow. And how many floors up are you?
Oh, we were like way up.
Oh.
Yeah.
So if you miss that.
Yeah, we were like 20, 30 floors up.
Oh.
Filming this. So, but wow. They wanted me to just slide down to the next floor and, you know, kind of lasso myself onto the, yeah, crazy.
That and it, crazy. But it worked, though.
You oh, did it worked, it. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But that's so, one but of those days.
In the film, though, what really sucks is they see me reaching for it.
Yes.
And they should have just, you know, kept filming from below. But so they see me reaching for it, and then they do the cutaway of me stepping onto the...
So you could have done it in two takes
yeah,
in a safe way.
Yeah, of course, without the duct tape.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. That was crazy. That was probably the most dangerous. Mm. Yeah.
So then I think we need to talk about one of the greatest, perhaps the single greatest cinematic achievement ever in Hong Kong.
Hey, don't laugh at that film. It became a huge international cult.
I'm not laughing, all right? For every Wong Kar-wai film, there is the occasional story of Ricky, all right? Yeah. For every, you know, art house film, there is Robot Tricks. Robot Tricks, which is a Category 3 film.
Yeah,
which
and
is,
I never laughed so hard during the entire time I was filming that movie.
So you knew when you were making that movie that it was...
Well, no, originally, the director, I remember she took me out to dinner to a Thai restaurant in Repulse Bay. Mm-hmm. She wanted me to play one of the lead.
Right.
Yeah. I think the Arab Prince.
Yes.
You know, and there's a scene with the bathing naked women around, you know. And
sounds rough.
Yeah. So she took me out to Repulse Bay and she said, well, there'd be two scenes where you'd be fully naked.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I have trouble. I said, I'm not doing any full frontal nudity.
Right,
I said,
right.
The back's fine. She says, okay. I said, well, what are the scenes? Well, one of them is in this spa, as it was shown, right? And another one is on your yacht. Yeah. I said, well, okay. I said, well, is there going to be the tea lady on the set as well? Uh-huh. Or is it just the director and producer and star? I said, well, what are you going to do about the privates? How are you going to handle that? You know, because even though you're going to show the back, I was still kind of swinging around here.
Yeah.
You know?
They're just going to go to they're just going to go to Temple Street and get one of those underwears.
No, but wait. So you know what she said?
What?
We can duct tape it down.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Duct tape.
Duct tape.
Yeah.
Wow. This is going to be the duct tape episode.
I said, you ain't putting no duct tape on my private parts. That stuff, you have to peel that shit off.
Yeah.
That's
not going to happen.
I say, what are we doing? Electrical work here?
Wow. Yeah. Like these in the days before Gorilla
so,
Tape.
Yeah. I had some other stories came up too, which were even more bizarre. And I, you know, at the end of it, I said, nah, you know what? I'm not going to do this.
Right.
I'm filming Condor, which is like really important. I
right.
was
still
doing Fury in Red. So I said, is there another role? So she just gave me the role of, you know, the three.
Sheik's bodyguard, according
the
to IMDb.
Sheik's bodyguard. Yeah.
And you have exactly. a glorious death in this film. Spoiler warning.
Yeah, spoiler warning. Ooh, yeah.
It's a you get a boulder. You get a boulder kicked.
A polystyrene boulder kicked by the great Billy Chow.
Right.
As I'm running away.
That's yeah. right. And that was the end of it, right?
That was it. My
and
white,
you had a white suit, so...
Yeah, I had the white suit on, so I could not muff up that...
You got one take to do
falling
that.
Falling over.
You got to be a one-take Jake.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. All right, and then we're going to come to, like, some of your more recent stuff.
Do we have to?
In 93, there's a movie called Sex for Sale. Is that a real thing?
Oh, no, no.
I'm very disappointed. Looking at the cover of that.
That I do see. I'm like, who put that there? Yeah.
Incredible.
That would have been a good one.
Yeah, that would have been a good one. Then you have Blazin' in 2001.
Yeah,
is that where you met Bobby Samuels,
again,
right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Bobby and I, even though we knew about each other in Hong Kong, we never met in Hong Kong. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had, obviously, I think you've interviewed him here.
Yeah, I had him
You know,
here.
He had his that story with Sammo. Sammo kind of kept him down a little, I think, in many ways. But, you know, pros and cons to everybody's career in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Sure.
But I met him on... he saw my photo on this stack that they sent in when people were auditioning for this film. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, my God, Vincent Lin. So, yeah, he called me in and Steve Tartaglia and, yeah.
Incredible. So you have a couple of movies here, but we got to wrap it up because I know you got somewhere to go.
I'm good.
But one of the things you've done recently, which I thought was a lot of fun, well, let's say recently, like in the last few years, is for Art art school dropouts.
Oh, yes, yes.
You did the Forbidden Kingdom, the LARP story, right? Where you had the Tai Chi master, right?
I know, yeah.
Those guys are amazing. I love their stuff. I follow them online. How cool is it, like, YouTube and the internet has given, like, people a platform to kind of show what you only a few people had the chance to do back in the day. It's really incredible. True. You did a great job. Those guys are awesome.
They are. They are really great.
Yeah. Are you planning on doing anything more like that? Or are you kind of...
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know, right?
I don't know.
So what are the plans for Vincent Lin in the future? Now that you're back in New York, what are you going to do? Leave New York again?
Probably. You know, these past number of years, I mean, 5-6 years since I started my foundation, We Can Save Children, that's been my main focus. I've spent, beyond obviously COVID in the past 18 months, I've spent like a good 6 months, as you know, out of the country.
Right.
Somewhere in Africa, somewhere in the Middle East. And that's really my passion. Yeah. So that's the reason why I wrote this book and this follow-up book. And even the song that Melissa and I wrote, Just Imagine People United, it was really focused on... you know, doing humanitarian work, doing good things for, you know, children and so forth.
Absolutely. So if people want to find out more about your humanitarian stuff, what website
should they go to? Just go to wecansavechildren.org.
wecansavechildren.org. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Vincent, it was great having you here. I'm glad we were finally able to do this.
And you know what I'm going to get you for Christmas?
What's that?
Duct tape.
Awesome.
It has 1,001 uses.
You should write a book on the 1,001 uses of duct tape.
Yeah, really.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming. It was so cool seeing you. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex.
All right, everyone. So how did you like that episode? And is there anyone you would like me to interview in the future? Let me know in the comments below, and I'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Si Kung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
It's a thing.
Oh, it's a charger, see? USBs, all this stuff is plugged in there.
But not for iPhone 6s, though.
No. They don't make that technology anymore. They gave that up 10 years ago.
All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be interviewing his good friend, Vincent Lin. Oh, Sifu Vincent Lin.
Yeah, and also just talking, not interviewing. Sounds like some
talking.
Incarceration. He will be interrogating his good friend. Oh,